You are a practicing neurosurgeon. Mm-hmm. How many surgeries have you done over the course of your life?
Over 10,000.
Okay. So you've done 10,000 surgeries and you have an epiphany.
I wouldn't say I had the epiphany. It's kind of, this is you know, how you like to call these collateral damages that are happy accidents?
Yeah.
I think Sheryl Crow wrote a song about that, if I'm not mistaken. But this is kind of what happened. At the time, I had come through residency. Chantal has been with me pretty much the whole time I was a resident. So she knows a lot of this story. I was an All-American baseball player, football player, phenomenal shape. Got to be 4 or 5 years after my residency, 360 pounds. So I went to my best primary care doctor who sent me the most business, who I made the most money from. And I said, Scott, tell me how to lose weight. So he gave me the standard answer that you get from most of your podcast people. You know, exercise more and eat less calories. So I did that. I gained 30 more freaking pounds. So, you know, there's a pretty famous guy that you're probably going to hear us talk about a couple of times more, Einstein. And he said, if you keep doing the same shit over and over again, it's called, and expect a different result, it's insanity. So I had done this multiple times. I did what the centralized prescription said to do, and it didn't work. Then the happy accident happened in Birmingham. So I get up to give a talk. I developed some instruments for minimally invasive spine surgery that everybody was excited about. And I was up there talking. I stood up to get to the podium. And all of a sudden, I got horrible pain in my right leg. That's all I did was stand up. Turned out I was fortunate. There was some ortho guys there. They examined me. They said, look, we think you got a bucket handle tear in your knee. And that's why you need help. So to drive home from Birmingham back to Nashville, where I was practicing at the time, I actually had to call one of my friends to meet me at a place in Tennessee just so I could take a piss because I couldn't get out of my car. That's how bad it was. So I get home and I'm kind of stunned. One of the orthopedic surgeon's wives calls me up and she goes, look, my husband says you're a really smart guy. She goes, I want to share some with you. She goes, I'm going to send you 6 papers and a book. She goes, I'm going to tell you exactly the order I want you to read these in. She goes, but I think I can help you solve
What's
this
her
problem.
Background? Why did she know this stuff?
I guess I can talk about this now. This is a little bit, you know, dicey. She happened to be an executive with Qualcomm. She also has a track history with a company you may know, Amgen. And Amgen at the time, the papers were all tied to leptin and leptin biology.
They eventually held the patent, right?
Right, they did. And they canceled the synthetic leptin trials. So I'm going to tell you TLDR. What was she trying to get me to understand? The reason I was a fat ass, that if I could take synthetic leptin as a drug, that I could lose the weight really fast and that'd be it. And then she also told me that after they canceled the trial, they also then patented all the cold receptors that were out there. But that wasn't the interesting thing. She was trying to lead me down a path for me to blow up centralized medicine. But here was the craziest part of the story. She sent me a book. You know what the name of the book was? The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, written by Robin Sharma. You know anything about the book?
I've heard of it.
Okay. So Julian Battle, Jewish lawyer from New York, best in the business. And this is a fable, just so we're clear. This is not a true story. She told me to make sure that I read the book first before I read the papers. So I read the book, and here's the TLDR on the book. Julian Battle has a heart attack in court, okay? He's a boisterous, loudmouth New Yorker who, you know, kicks ass and takes names. No one really likes him, but everybody knows he's really good at his job. He has the heart attack. He quits, sells his Ferrari, moves to the Himalaya Mountains, comes back a year later, tan, 100 pounds less, nice guy, everybody likes him. And, you know, Robin Sharma is trying to give you the, you know, touchy-feelies all the way through. That's the TLDR of the book. So I read this and totally miss why she sent me everything. I thought, instead of uncovering what Qualcomm and Amgen were really doing, she wanted me to figure out, is the book possible? Is what's in the book possible from a neurologic standpoint? Is she trying to tell me that actually may be able to fix myself if I look at this a different way. So I started taking the book, the same thing I just showed with Rick before you came. I took the book and started writing all my ideas in the book. And these were disparate. You need to know a little bit about my background to understand where I came from. I'm from New York City. I spent my entire childhood either playing baseball, football, street hockey, or in the Museum of Natural History. I had no money. I was a poor kid. My parents were separated. My mom was on welfare for most of the time I was coming up. And I used to tail around with all the ladies who rich kids from Fifth Avenue would pay for to learn all the things. So I have an incredible educational background in a lot of different areas. I'm a jack of all trades and master of none. That's the truth. So I write all these things down in the book. And I go on a trip with my family, my son, my daughter, my ex-wife, and me. And at the time, I'm still 360 pounds. I go see the orthopedic surgeon. He tells me, look, you need to have the surgery to have this done, this and that. But I know he's full of shit because I know what the studies say about the knee surgery. I said, I'm going to put this off until I figure out how I can lose the weight. So I'm at the foot of Michelangelo's David in Florence. All this is floating in my head all at once. And I step to the foot of David and look up at his ass and then look down at me. And I said, that 500 years ago was perfection. I'm a modern human who's supposed to have all this progress and knowledge, and I'm suboptimal. What's the difference? And when I looked up, I'm certain you've been there. I don't know if you've been to see David. It's in a dome. There's a big, nice marble cornice all the way around. And on the cornice is a bird, and the sunlight was coming in and hit David right in his chest. And I looked up, and that moment it clicked. I was like, wait a minute. The big difference is the light 500 years ago, and David's a mammal. The bird's a mammal. The bird comes from theropod dinosaur. What's the connection between theropod dinosaurs and mammals? Turns out those are the two animals that got through the last extinction event 65 million years ago. What was the other key between those two animals? They have melanin on the surface, don't they? Furry little creatures we came from on our skin and hair. And theropod dinosaurs were famous because they were flying. Archaeopteryx being the first dinosaur I ever learned about at the Museum of Natural History. So I thought about it more, and then I thought about the monk who sold his Ferrari. I said, I know India was a continent that used to be where Antarctica was. It came up and crashed in to Asia, created the Himalaya Mountains. I know when you go up, you get more UV light. That would explain why he was tan. And it's cold as shit up there. And I was like, cold thing doesn't matter. Then I started thinking about what I learned from NASA and the Sherpas. Sherpas take 200-300 pounds of stuff, put it on their back, these little guys, and they triple their body weight when the Europeans and the Americans can't do, and they pay them. And I knew that NASA had studied them and found out that they kind of have superhuman strength. In fact, when they up on the mountain, one of the things that's interesting, do you know what they eat to power themselves? Grass-fed butter. That's it.
Ghee?
Yeah. Butter. They eat sticks of butter while they're going up. And I'm going, ketosis, tan, cold. All these thermodynamic givens are in there. And I'm thinking about the book, thinking about Julian Battle. So at the foot of David, I realized there had to be a pathway in humans. In fact, in every single mammal. So you'll like this part. I go back to Vanderbilt Medical School Library, and I don't open up books of the day, you know, the early 2000s. I go back and open up neurosurgery textbooks from 50, 70, 80 years ago, looking for a pathway somewhere where sun would hit us that could explain these effects. Because I certainly didn't learn them in medical school at LSU, and I didn't learn them in residency at LSU. And lo and behold, one of the papers that she mentioned about leptin, I was like, man, leptin came around. It was discovered in Rockefeller University in 1994. I said, that's after I even went to medical school. So that explained why I didn't know about it.
I think it's with Jeffrey Friedman's lab.
Correct. Yep. Exactly. And when I found that out, then I realized that there was a pathway. That's when I fast forward to the new neurosurgery books. And these were brand new at the time because not a lot of work was done on them. That's when I realized that leptin was connected to the melanocortin pathway. And then I knew right away, because being a neurosurgeon, you learn about POMC. POMC is a chemical that has six different things in it. I use the analogy like New York. It's a deli slicer, cuts it into six things, and those six things are important. Turns out one of the things that are in there is alpha MSH. Alpha MSH is the reason you have a tan.
Malarian stimulating hormone.
Correct. Alpha MSH was big. So I was like, that's the part. The biggest part of the story is I started to realize, okay, how do we assimilate light? So one of the things in neurosurgery that always confounded me in my training, we never learned. We know about the SCN, suprachiasmatic nucleus, but we didn't learn that much about circadian biology at all. And I started to realize there were certain things I was taught in medical school that I knew were bullshit. Place that I went to medical school, you may know this guy very well, Nicholas Bazan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Nicholas Bazan and I, he taught me in medical school.
I never thought I'd hear that name again.
Yeah.
And not because he isn't interesting. He's very interesting. But yeah. Yeah. We've met. We've spent time talking science.
Well, he was very influential in my training. And from him, I knew one of the things that was a falsehood in ophthalmology was that the anterior chamber of the eye totally block UV light. Every doctor in every medical school today still learns that. And it's not true. And how do we know it's not true? From Bazan's work, when he was in Argentina, he radiated cow eyes. And he was able to find that UV light got through. So I asked myself the question, tan, what's tan in the eye? The RPE, the retinal pigmentum epithelium. That's where melanin is. And guess what RPE does? It rotates as light hits it, the same way chlorophyll does in a leaf.
Yeah, the RPE supplies pigment so that your photoreceptors can absorb light. It's a super dynamic structure. I didn't know it rotates, but that's a...
Correct.
Yeah.
So what the other thing that happens, if you know where it is in the retina, you have all these mitochondria. And then you have these weird cells behind the retina called Müller cells. Müller cells are like fiber optic cables that go straight to the midbrain. I'm like, I never learned anything about cells in neurosurgery residency, but I looked at the end part. I was thinking about light. I said, what's the target? Everything they targeted had melanin in it. And I started to go, that's weird. All the pieces come together and I began to realize what the effect of cold was. Why? Because I have a pretty big understanding of biochemistry. And I said, in medical school, we talked about macros. That's what you guys mostly talk about on your podcast. And you know that I can't stand that.
Because I get that sense from Twitter, but right. But I also get the sense that you're willing to sit here and talk to me nonetheless.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
The input to mitochondria is electron chain transport. The output is actually the way protons go. So I realized at this eureka moment that I didn't know shit about electrons and protons because I didn't learn about that in medical school. You know, I was not a quantum physicist, but guess what happened in the 18 months? The 18 months after this event, I realized that everything I learned in medical school or everything in my life 40 years before that was a lie. So when you think about what Rick has written in his book, I had to suspend the belief. Like, as you sit next to me right now, I know everything you believe. And I know why you believe it, because I was there. That 18 months of my life was the hardest 18 months ever.